I kindly ask that you allow us to make a brief introduction on the main points as per our earlier SENSE announcement, after which we'll take questions. We have received several questions, a lot of them in the last 30 minutes, so evidently we didn't have time to prepare for all of them. We have decided to not moderate the call in any way, so I kindly ask that you keep your line muted after our introduction, so that we don't have a very noisy situation, and that we try to take your questions one by one. If we do not get to answer your question during this call, which unfortunately we'll have to limit to about an hour and 10 minutes because we have I have another radio interview and lots of things were scheduled one after the other today, we will respond to your email in the next 24 hours. So with that being said, I'd like to get into the detail of this, or how we see this whole circumstance. So, Mirela, please interrupt when you consider. The first thing I want to say is I'd like to set the scene. So the context is that NEPI Rockcastle, considering NEPI's history as well, is an 11-year-old public company. We have successfully complied with all the rules of a number of regulated stock exchanges to this point. We have adhered to multiple jurisdictions, local accounting standards, international accounting standards, and corporate governance best practices. This is evidently proven in our disclosure throughout the years. Furthermore, our company is audited, or has been audited continuously, by Big Four reputable companies. And we have had the trust of thousands of shareholders, and as you have seen, we have performed well in our history. Last but not least, I have personally been here since the beginning of NEPI, so that back in 2007, and the statements that we make, that I make as a member of the management of this company, hold direct liability and responsibility. All of the above that I just mentioned are in, how best do I say this? They contrast with the entity that has just made in writing some serious allegations at us. And so Viceroy is an entity which describes itself on its website, which is the only way one can contact them, as a group of individuals that see the world differently. That, I think, I clearly agree with, and all my colleagues agree with. I think they see it not just differently, but also misleadingly. Furthermore, their contact page refers to doomsday scenarios and a Gmail contact address. In the document that they make public, they state their document is purely for educational purposes and is not a statement of fact. Yeah, these are quotes from their document. And also they quote, while they stand to benefit from a decrease in the stocks or bonds that they follow. They also clearly state that they are not registered as an advisor or are regulated in any particular way. All of this contradicts clearly with the statements they make throughout the document. Some of them are highlighted in red, some of them are in bold. In my view, their goal is clear. It's a way to make money. They put some statements together which have some degree of believability, and they intend to manipulate the market to their benefit. And so this, in brief, is the context as I see it from our point of view. To get into some more details, which we will not go through all the points that we've covered in the announcement because it would not be worth the time. But I want to make a few points. The gentleman from Viceroy that was on radio yesterday indicated that they have been preparing to release this report for 6 months. I highlight that in this entire period of 6 months, not only can one become very acquainted with the accounting practices of any jurisdiction on this planet, but can also contact this company, namely our company, to ask any questions where they have confusion. Yeah, we have never been contacted by this entity describing itself as Viceroy. This clearly results in them having had material errors in the report. They've made unsubstantiated claims, and the overall report, as we've stated, is grossly misleading. I feel, and Mirela can much better highlight this than me when we get to the Q&A, that they intentionally ignore or do not understand the reporting regulations that we follow in our various jurisdictions. So they do a mixture in their analysis. They do a mixture of mathematical additions of local accounting disclosures and international IFRS accounting disclosures, which are presented in our annual report. I think that the most grave thing from this entire circumstance is that they accuse our management of lying. I accuse them of manipulating information for their own benefit. They should disclose their holdings, affiliations, and intentions so that the market can understand the full context. It is clear that there is a material imbalance between what we stand to lose as a company, as a shareholder base, and what this entity with the Gmail address stands to lose and to gain by disseminating this publication on a website for educational purposes. To go back to some of the main points on our announcement, in respect of the merger, they make claims that there was significant premiums paid for and there's no justification. We all recall that the merger was an all-share transaction and both companies had material premiums to NAV at the time of the deal, and the share swap reflected the fact that the market priced the shares of both companies at similar premiums. Furthermore, former NEPI shareholders benefited immediately from an uplift in NAV. Another point was in respect of involvement of our former chairman, Dan, and affairs of NEPI back from 2008. Viceroy probably intentionally ignores disclosure, so we have a sense announcement on our website, and we keep available all former NEPI and all former Rockcastle announcements. They simply ignore that it's actually highlighted in bold that Dan recused himself from any decision related to that deal. Furthermore, I want to point out that there's some 4 degrees of separation between us and the entity which Viceroy claim has had some sort of fraudulent conduct. Furthermore, in addition to this 4 degrees of separation, the respective fraudulent conduct arose 4 years after the respective transactions. So there's no possible way that one could have foreseen what would happen 4 years later in an entity 4 degrees of separation away. As a side comment, everybody on this planet has 6 or 7 degrees of separation. Another point, they referred that we as a company or the board of NEPI Rockcastle has decided to ignore the letter from 10 stakeholders received back in August. That is not the case. I think shareholders will attest to the fact that we have engaged with them on a public call. And after that call, in which no particular claims were concluded to be investigated by us, after that call, we took time to meet again with all of these stakeholders and more, and still there were no particular allegations that we considered to follow up on because there was nothing substantiated that could be investigated. I still hold the same view that if there is something that's substantiated that one can investigate, we will do so. If after these events we get comments on our whistleblowing line, which has been open, that please investigate this particular matter and it is substantiated, we will consider this as a board and provide all the background and support to the team to do so. I also want to point out some interesting errors from the Viceroy report, just to highlight the degree of professionalism that was engaged over there. So they indicate that one of our SPVs has 1,800 days receivable, and that this really doesn't reconcile with our 99.9% collection rate. The respective SPV was a new development, and that development was operational for less than a month at the time of the December 2017 financial statements, which Viceroy reviewed. So somehow that company developed 1,800 days of accounts receivable in less than a month. It doesn't take an accounting mastermind to figure out that there's something exaggerated with that particular statement. Another claim was that they managed to get access to all our local statutory filings, with the exception of one company for 2014, 15, and 16, and we're alluding that we're not disclosing or not reporting some of our SPVs. The answer was simple. It's a newly formed SPV for a development which is going to open next month. So the degree of information that they have bothered to get to was clearly not one that they wanted to get all the clear facts, but one that they wanted to put together a picture which seemed at least alarming and at best misleading. To conclude on my general view of the circumstance, I consider that Viceroy is applying a carpet bombing approach and hoping that something sticks and is causing panic in the process. I would make an analogy that what they have done is similar to calling or shouting bomb after having boarded a plane. Just because you don't know the rules should not absolve you from the consequences or the responsibility. And this is something that we would like to draw the attention of the FSCA to and other regulators in Europe to attend to, because despite the facts not having been clear in their report, there's still material havoc that they have caused in the market, and I believe that it has caused monetary harm to several parties. That being said, Mira, would you like to add something before we open the line to questions?
Yeah, just a few facts. First of all, I would comment that As a background, we have a highly experienced finance team here. So we have around 25 people in finance that are spread across Netherlands, Romania, and Poland. All of them have at least 10 years experience of big four and multinational companies. And we don't have any reason to be concerned that our level of knowledge or experience is insufficient for us to prepare the financial statements, either statutory or IFRS of the group. The second point, and this is just administrative, is that given that we don't have all the shareholders, bondholders, all the stakeholders in this call, we will not be able to share non-public information. So we can only explain the information that is already in the public domain. And if there are other questions, also if there are specific questions, would prefer to answer in private, or if there's something that we consider is material, we'll release subsequent announcements. As Alex said, we've received a few dozen emails in the last couple of hours with questions. We managed to answer some of them, but we couldn't even get to read all the messages. So the kind request that we have is that we go through the, let's say, general comments, so that we don't waste everybody's time trying to find a specific number in the financial statements at this point. And if there are specific questions, we can obviously, we'll revert very soon with the answer by email.
And evidently any figure that we need to provide and was not yet provided will be provided to everybody, everyone's benefit publicly.
Yeah. One more comment here. Some of the messages that we received required disclosure of information that's not usually public. And this is not because it would impact in any way the price of the shares or anything else. It's simply because it's not industry practice to make public some information. And we consider that given that our competitors don't make all the details public regarding, for example, the operational terms that they have in certain contracts and so on, it would be damaging to the company to provide this kind of granular information. That being said, I don't think that we are here to discuss very granular information, but simply to understand what is the company's position regarding this report, and to discuss the, if you will, the big picture or the main concerns that our stakeholders may have in respect of the company.
Okay, so with that being said, let's unmute the participants line. And let's try to see if we can manage. Question, if you're not speaking, please put your line on mute.
The funniest question.
My ears are getting broken by the video.
Who's playing in the microphone? Is your mic on mute?
Hello. No.
Okay, so once again, I kindly ask that please put your lines on mute so that some people can ask questions and we can response to them. With the lines unmuted, we hear lots of noise and music. So we'll try unmute again, and please somebody ask a question.
Oh my God. Thank you.
Alex?
Yeah.
Kirby Lochner from Krasman Capital. Just a quick question. Do you think there's any possibility that Viceroy are an indirect front for corporate interests which possibly have interest in your company and, you know, using Viceroy to push the price down serves their long-term interests, or have you got no reason to believe that that might be a possible scenario?
Thank you for the question. So evidently the thought has crossed our minds, and we have asked around.
When you answer the
question, mute everyone again while you answer.
Okay, so I heard the question. The question was if we have any reason to believe of any hidden interests or plots for corporate action. As I said, the thought has crossed our minds, and despite having asked around, we have no reason to believe that this is the case. Again, this is not the type of thing that somebody would call us up about, but as we stand, we don't have any such information. For the next questions, we're actually going to use, we have another facility here to ask questions with the lines being unmuted one at a time, so you will be able to press a number to get a spot in the queue. So, Iris, can we please do the call and that way with a managed Q&A session, and please you manage the facility. So let's start that managed Q&A. So we will wait for the next orderly question.
From Amber Alpha. I have a quick question regarding how the company accounts for the intercompany borrowing. Can you just help us understand what happens, you know, if an SPV is planning to do any development work or acquiring something, you know, how money is lent from the central company to these assets and what the funding costs for these are? Thank you.
Sure. So the assets, the SPVs, are financed through a combination of equity and debt. In some jurisdictions, we actually have certain requirements on how much debt the SPV should have, the minimum amount. Most of the developments are funded through intercompany loans. That is because we prefer not to have significant secured debt at property level. We have a preference for unsecured debt at group level. So basically, we raise unsecured debt at the level of the holding entity in Netherlands, or we raise equity at the level of the parent company in Isle of Man, and this flows down through the group structure to the SPVs in various countries, as I said, through a combination of equity and debt, depending on local requirements and obviously on the amount needed to fund certain projects.
Hi, it's Greg Rawlins from Reachway Global. My question is that SPV that was targeted where they accused you of having 180 days outstanding for your debtors.
1,800.
The 1,800. Could you tell me what the days outstanding at the moment is, or historically since inception and it started operating?
We'll need to check, but in general, we have an average of 29 days at group level, 29 receivables days.
The property is, by the way, to be clear, the property is Râmnicu Vâlcea Shopping Center, which is in Romania,
and
a few hours from Bucharest, and can be seen. We can, please.
I would just like to point out that our assumption is that the numbers that have caused this weird computation of the receivables balance actually included not the tenant receivables, but also VAT receivables, because when a certain development is under construction, you obviously have significant payments to suppliers, and this bear VAT. This VAT is afterwards recovered from the state based on fiscal control, and but it takes sometimes a year or so, a bit more than a year, to recover all this amount. So my guess would be that these VAT receivables were added by mistake to the computation, and obviously having a very large receivable balance reported to sales for only a few weeks can result in weird receivable days.
Thank you. I'd appreciate if you could just give that some detail when you write your response on that specific SPV that they targeted, but it sounds as though you've got a valid explanation.
Yeah.
Sure.
We will.
Thank you.
From General Investments, and my question was on liquidity condition of the company. How do you think that this occurrence will affect the cost of funding of your company going forward, and which is the present condition of the liquidity line that you actually have?
Okay, for the moment we have significant liquidity available. We have committed revolving facilities that amount to a total of 400 million euro, and these are now long-term facilities, so for periods of 2 and 3 years. We also have some amounts in the listed securities portfolio, and also some cash available. So we don't have liquidity concerns. Obviously, there is no way to estimate what is the impact on investors' perception until we actually take some more time to speak with investors about this report that came out just yesterday. And evidently, this can only be seen once we try to access the capital market. Is that answer satisfactory?
Yes, maybe you have some refinancing needs in the nearest 6 to 12 months that need to be refinanced, and in which way?
We have about 250 million that is due in 2019, so nothing in the next few months. And then we have in 2020, there's one of the secured loans for Bonarca that's expiring, and we have another, I think the first bond is actually due in February 2021. So these are not very large amounts that we cannot afford to repay, or that can in any way affect our liquidity.
Okay. Thanks.
To find out, the allegations that Vitoi make with regards to your local tax returns in Romania, I mean, those are quite serious allegations. The auditing firm, PwC, that signs off on your group accounts, are they under any obligation or just a willingness to come out with a confirmation that they still stand by their opinion?
This is something that we will obviously need to discuss with the auditors. I don't think they have any obligation, or that this is a standard procedure for them to come out and make public statements, because they act, they apply the audit rules, the international standards on auditing, and it's actually much more simple. So they issue an audit opinion, and unless they have clear reasons why they should change or withdraw this opinion, they don't really go out on Twitter, on Facebook, and make statements. So, I mean, we'll obviously discuss this with them, but I don't think this is a general procedure.
Okay, thank you.
From Banco Financia. I just have a couple of questions, please. The first one is regarding the Viceroy report. So they claim on the receivables, that is 81 receivables days on your Romanian SPVs. Can you just please point out if this is incorrect, which data, because they show the data they're using, which data input is incorrect?
Sure, so we've addressed this in our response that was issued today. Our computation shows that the average receivable days number is actually 29 days.
I understand, but given, because basically what they're saying is that you have, for your Romanian SPVs, you have an operating revenue estimate of about 150 million and receivables of 33 million. And they say they get this from your reporting. So my question is, are these numbers incorrect regarding your Romanian business?
Yes. So, as per our response today, we have 26.6 million of the tenant receivables that were not due, of the 34 million, and we think that the amounts are incorrect.
For your Romanian SPVs, can you disclose what should be the correct amounts in terms of revenue and receivables outstanding to compare to what they estimated or provided?
We can obviously compute this, but it won't be materially different to the 29 days that we have for the entire group.
Okay.
And in the meantime, by the way, somebody just checked, and the total outstanding receivable on that property, the Râmnicu Vâlcea one, was 120,000 euros.
Yeah. And the VAT balance, and the VAT to be recovered was of 3.8 million euro at the 31st of December 2017, which was recovered in February and March 2018.
And this was actually.
So you're saying that on the receivables that Viceroy is showing of 33.243 million, not all of these are ongoing business, part of this is VAT?
Yes.
A large amount is, so especially on development projects, you will have tens of millions of euros of VAT recoverable.
Okay. The other question is regarding an announcement they've just done. I'm not sure if you've seen it. This was like, I think, an hour ago or so, where somehow they got this, it seems like they got a small part of, I think, your property valuation. And there's five line items that of information that is requested, two of which the evaluator is saying that they've requested and was not provided. Can you make a comment on this?
Sure. So this is something that we've also addressed in the report that we issued earlier. And the main comment is that the valuation experts usually use their own assumptions when doing the computations for these values. So they have the proper experience and they know the assets, they visit the assets every year. So they, based on the market context, the age of the asset, the location, the size and type of the asset, they can easily estimate the market rents for certain spaces and what are the service charges and what are the, I don't know, the period, for example, to extend a certain lease, what is the capex invested and so on. So for certain things, we don't provide this kind of information simply because the valuation experts do their own assumptions. But in general, I would like to point out that we do provide the valuation experts with the full rent roll. So these are the files that show all the contracts that we have, all the tenants with very detailed information on the expiries, on the rent, on the service charges, marketing charges, fit outs, and so on.
Okay. So I just have one colleague here with me who's going to ask a question as well.
Sure.
Please.
Hi, I'm Gilmore, George's colleague. Regarding what you mentioned about the auditors not particularly going to pronounce on this, not going to speak about this, would it be likely that you would put in an independent independent investigation to so that you could fight against these allegations, as it is to your interest to clear these issues.
So as I said about 15 minutes ago, if this turns out to be what the shareholders want, this is what we will do. So if after our various disclosures subsequent to this report, investors will feel they'd like us to investigate one or all of the allegations raised by Viceroy or any other party on our whistleblowing hotline, we will do so. Evidently, shareholders will need to keep in mind that this will be a particular cost.
Yeah. Can I also point out that I don't see, or maybe you can explain why do you think that the audit done by PwC should be reperformed? Simply because they are not willing to make public statements, it doesn't mean that the audit report they issued, which is public and is issued to all the shareholders of the company, and there's obviously all the legal liabilities and is done according to the audit standards. Why do you think this is not sufficient? Because to reperform an audit, these are thousands and thousands of hours of work, and we would need to have a very clear reason for concern.
I mean, I wouldn't want to do an audit just because
a second audit.
People who think differently, how did they say it? A group of individuals that see the world differently think that we should pay another million euro to an auditor. So, as I said, if there is a clear demand from shareholders to do so, and I specifically say shareholders here and not stakeholders because the shareholders will pay for it, we will do so. We are here to serve the shareholders. We're not here to, you know, serve a group of individuals that think differently and want to educate the world. So with that being said, please answer what Mirela asked, and then we'd like to move on to the next question. We have still a few people in line, in queue.
Yeah, I did. No, the question I asked was just rhetoric, was just asking if you would, since there was a question asked before about about
the
so I just asked if in case it's not done, would there be a consideration on your part? I mean, I'm not asking you for an independent, or I'm not either asking which way or the other way. Yeah. I'm just asking there would be an option, if that was an option.
Look, as I said, this is the shareholders' company. they feel that we need to be reviewed or investigated in any way, I'm more than open to it. We just need to keep in mind the cost implications, and we should have the right reasons to do it, not just to check some box somewhere. So if you're happy, we can move on to the next one.
Yes. Thank you.
Hello? If you can ask the question, please. Let's move to the next participant.
Hi. Hi, Alex.
Okay, sorry about that. Please email me the question and I'll answer. Sorry for skipping. Please ask the question.
Can you hear me, Alex?
Yes.
Alex, yeah, just a couple of quick questions from us. You didn't answer the question on the rate charged on the borrowing to the SPVs. If you can just give us a weighted average number on that. Can you also tell us on the quantum of the loans to the SPVs? And the other question is really around the quality of earnings, which this report is kind of questioning, regarding the finance income versus whether these assets at the SPV level are breaking even or earning a good net rental income, which is not seen in the recon that you give in your response. Can you just answer on those points, please?
Alex, just to add to my colleague's question, can you also give us a quick summary of how the SENCAP rule works in Romania and if the SPVs that are targeted are complying with those rules if they are applicable? Thank you.
Okay. I will pick up the question. So in the first part, you asked about the level of the interest charged on intercompany loans. This is something that's set by the transfer pricing files, which are benchmark and which are done by experts. So we have several experts in transfer pricing from Netherlands and also from each of the countries where we operate. That look into the transactions that we have between the groups, so intercompany, and they benchmark this against the market and they recommend the appropriate levels of interest or other fees that should be charged between the companies. So the interest percentages are not the same between the companies. The amount of the loans, obviously this is something that we can prepare, but we need to keep in mind that we have more than 100 SPVs, and the loans, some of them are coming from Netherlands, some more are coming from the Isle of Man. And, there's a lot of information, and I'm not sure what is the exact concern or the point that we're trying to make, because overall the total of money that flows intercompany is obviously the amounts of money that are raised at group level from third parties, either equity or debt. It can't be more than that. So can you please specify what is the exact concern?
Well, I suppose what I'm getting at is if you look at the reconciliation you give in point 2.1 of your response here, the key things are there are certain large non-cash adjustments that are there. It looks like the structure is designed around a tax aspect or an outcome that's required. It doesn't indicate, though, going through the reconciliation, the level of net rental income that you generate at a group level from the Romanian SPVs. I just want clarity that there is a significant amount of net rental income. The structure shows the tax dynamic, but it doesn't reflect the net rental income from the properties in any level of detail. Can you just clarify on that, please?
Sure. So the reconciliation that was prepared in the response is actually linking the profit the profit for the Romanian SPVs between the statutory accounting standards and the financial statements which are prepared in local currency to the amounts corresponding to Romania that are included in the consolidation. Because these are at profit level, you obviously don't see the rental income and the costs that basically add up to get to this profit level. So if we reconcile profit with profit, we're only going to see this kind of adjustment. If we want to see the net rental income, we have disclosures in the financial statement that show the net rental income by geographies. Furthermore, you made a point about the structure being built around the tax considerations. And I can tell you that this is incorrect. We build a structure based on the funding strategy of the group. If the funding strategy of the group is to raise equity and unsecured debt, this implies that the money will flow through the holding companies to the SPVs by intercompany loans. If we want to have a smaller, let's say, REIT structure where everything is funded through secured debt, then obviously you'll have debt at each SPV level and you won't have intercompany debt because this is replaced by bank debt. But this is not what we're going for here because we're an investment-grade company. We have access to capital markets. Our focus is to maintain the unsecured funding and actually increase the percentage of assets that is not geared at group level. So there's no other way to fund the developments and all the SPVs than to push the cash through using equity and intercompany debt.
Is it possible you can give us, not on an SPV by SPV basis, but just on a weighted average for Romania, the aggregate quantum of loans provided to the SPVs and the weighted average rate of borrowing in Romania? Is it 5 to 7%, 4%, just a range to help us with our modeling?
Okay. I don't have the exact number in front of me. What I can tell you is that there's also a difference that we need to make between the interest, the accounting interest on these loans, which is the contractual one, and what is deducted for fiscal purposes. Because the accounting interest, the contractual one, can be 5, 6, 7, 8% based on the transfer pricing benchmarking, while the interest that is deducted, it used to be, for example, in Romania, we used to deduct almost 4%, but the rules changed about 1 year ago, and now we deduct only a bit more than 1% from this interest because the rules are quite tight now. There are certain limits as nominal amounts and percentage of EBITDA that can be deducted according to the new laws in Romania. So even if the intercompany charge is, let's say, 5 or 6%, we only deduct a small portion of it for tax purposes. So this is why I'm saying that this is not driven by the tax structure because we can actually deduct very little of these expenses.
Okay. Thank you for your responses.
Okay. Can we, if we didn't answer all of them, please email us and we'll revert. We'd like to move on to the next because we still have a few people on. Please.
Hello?
Hello, we can hear you.
Hi. Oh, perfect. Most of my questions have been asked. Just the you talk about specialists that have helped you with the appropriate interest rate for the transfer pricing that's been charged. Can you disclose who they are? And, I mean, do you have multiple opinions on the interest rate that you charge the Romanian subsidiaries?
Yes, we do have multiple opinions. So we have consultants in the Netherlands that I mean, we used to have in the past Baker McKenzie. Now we have Dentons. We also have a specialized company that's operating in several countries in Europe. I think it's called TPS. This is specialized in transfer pricing services. And we also use local consultants in all the countries where we operate.
And have any of these subsidiaries been audited from the Romanian tax authorities?
And They have been audited for various purposes. I mean, it happens quite often, but I obviously don't have in front of me a clear situation of all the audits, because we have more than 100 SPVs in 12 countries now.
It's more. My question is more around the tax. Have the Romanian tax authorities taken a look?
Yes.
And you haven't had
to prove a point here. We have even won litigation against the state on this on this front. So
it was on VAT, yeah. So
yeah, but it's still the tax authority.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We have held our ground on various counts, and it's.
We're being audited quite frequently for VAT purposes, for example, because we need to recover the VAT for the construction costs, and we have quite often VAT audits.
And on the
obviously they also, sorry they also look at other taxation areas, not only VAT. They check all sorts of expenses and intercompany agreements and whether there is sufficient documentation for the charges and so on.
So the entities that have been audited from the tax authorities, they've looked at the interest rate charged, and I wouldn't say they're happy, but they haven't questioned it. We haven't disallowed it.
No, we didn't have issues on this front until now.
Look, we have no policy of undertaking any sort of practice that would endanger our overall standing, because anything like this would just be a short-term approach, and evidently, you know, operating the quantum of SPVs, there's always an SPV that could be audited. You know, any day of the week. So it's part of the routine here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, so obviously it seems going through the income statement on the subsidiaries, there are non-cash charges like depreciation. Would the cash flows look a lot different and look much closer to the IFRS statement? So would that kind of paint a completely different picture? So obviously Viceroy hasn't provided the cash flows. I don't think those are necessarily publicly available on the site that they,
mm-hmm.
that they gave, but would that be paint a different picture? Maybe you could just help us understand that.
In our view, the IFRS standards represent much better the image that the of the transactions and the financial position of the group overall, and this is why we use it as the group-wide accounting standard. Obviously, for local purposes, we are legally required to use the local standard, so there is no other way to do it. But for our type of business, real estate, we have and listed companies, obviously, this is IFRS is the standard, and we think that IFRS reflects better what happens with the properties, the fair values, and so on. And to add more color on this, whenever we publish semi-annually the accounting statements, IFRS consolidated statements, and also we publish something that we call the distributable earnings calculation, which is basically the dividend. This is a calculation where we exclude from the IFRS profits all the non-recurring and non-cash items. And this is the dividend that we pay. And we always reconcile this dividend in detail to the operating cash flows. And we make sure that we have very small differences that are easily explainable. So, because this is obviously something that we need to check, that we have sufficient cash from the operations to actually pay this dividend. And it's also a good health check for us to make sure that we didn't miss any adjustment when computing the right dividend amount.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, I have a few questions on the cash balances. So first one is whether the how the group consolidated cash and cash equivalents relates to subsidiary cash balances. So in short, if you add up all the subsidiary cash balances, does it add up to the consolidated cash balance you have, or are there accounting differences like on the other fronts? Then the second question is any of the cash that you have, is it restricted? And maybe you can give a split on what cash is in the holding companies versus mm-hmm. operating subsidiaries. And then the last question is on your cash flow statement. There is an item called a line item net cash flow from financial investments and assets at fair value through profit or loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could give a breakdown on that that income, mm-hmm. that cash income number, basically, because looking at your notes from the mm-hmm. annual report, it amounts to essentially revaluations from publicly mm-hmm. listed holdings you have and or equity swap transactions.
Okay. So I'll go step by step. The first part of the question, yes, all the cash in subsidiaries adds up to the cash at consolidated level. There are no adjustments related to cash. Cash is king. There's no other way to put it. We have some restricted cash, and this is because in some of the SPVs, mostly in Poland, we have secured debt. And we have certain requirements from the local banks to keep some cash in the accounts, and also we can extract cash from these SPVs and take it to the holding company level only on a quarterly basis, and obviously after submitting certain documentation to the bank. So we consider this cash in all the SPVs that have secured loans as restricted. The next part of the question is how much cash do we have in holding companies versus SPVs? I don't have the picture right now in front of me. I can tell you that most of the cash is held in the holding companies, the holding company Netherlands. And this is also because we have the revolving facilities contracted in that holding company, and we use these revolving facilities frequently. Withdraw and then push back money in the revolving facilities depending on the operational cash needs. So most of the cash is there, but obviously we do keep some small amount of cash in every SPV simply because we need to have available cash to pay expenses, taxes, and so on. And the last part of the question, the line about fair value, financial assets at fair value, this is the listed securities. This is part of the listed securities portfolio. So these are the listed shares that were brought to the merged entity by Rockcastle. We have sold down gradually these shares. They are held as instruments at fair value through profit and loss, and they are revalued constantly based on the market prices.
Thank you. And is there, could you maybe clarify, is there, if you look at that cash inflow number, is a big portion of that the equity swap transactions, or is it mainly the valuation of the listed equities?
So, can you please repeat? I'm not sure I understand the question.
Sure. Looking at your notes, what you would classify as fair value through P&L is either a revaluation of the listed equities or the equity swap transactions that you have.
No, that's actually the gross value of the listed shares.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. So we continue.
Hear me?
Yes.
My name is Robert Brunlam from Davis Asset Management, and I have a couple of questions. The first one, do you plan to initiate any buyback of the outstanding bonds given the sharp fall in price?
I don't think our lawyers will let us answer this. What I can tell you is that we have in our policy And we also included in our last financial statements that we reserve the right to buy back bonds or shares. We haven't done this at all until today. So it depends.
No, okay. The second question, do you plan to make any detailed presentation of your 9 months results? As I don't know, an additional side of transparency. I've seen that you have published a business update, but with only a small range of information.
We don't have this plan for the moment. In general, we try to align our reporting and disclosure to the peers, and most of our peers disclose semi-annual financial information and some operational results for Q1 and Q3. That being said, we really don't have anything to hide, so if you have any specific questions or concerns, please contact us separately and we can provide whatever information.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if it's not something material non-public.
If it is, then we consider it adequate needed for disclosure, it will be disclosed to everybody, not just on an individual emailer.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And the last question is if you envisage any legal action against Viceroy, given their...
I don't think I should state more than we've stated in our written announcements on this topic, but you can imagine that we are feeling actually let me stop it there. Yeah, so let's stick with what we put in writing. We reserve our rights against any company causing damage to the company or its stakeholders.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
May I ask you, how many appraiser firms do you use for valuing Romanian assets, and how often do you rotate the appraiser for Romanian assets?
For the moment, in Romania, we have only Cushman and Wakefield. We had Colliers for some of the properties last year, and we contract, we tender valuation every year. We do valuation twice a year, but we tender it once a year. And when we tender it, we invite all the, let's say, relevant, experienced companies, such as Cushman & Wakefield, JLL, Colliers, BNP and Knight Frank and so on.
CBRE.
So we select the valuers based on experience, and especially based on the experience in the local markets. In Romania, it happens that Cushman & Wakefield is the most experienced and has the largest team in the market, because we also have some size requirements. When you have 50 properties in one country, you need to make sure that the valuation expert can deliver 50 opinions in 2 or 3 weeks in January, when it's basically busy season for valuation experts, auditors, and so on. So the point is we do rotate valuers, and we will tender valuation also next year.
Okay, thank you.
You are the last person in the queue. Thank you for waiting.
My question's been on. Thanks a lot.
Oh.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I have two
there's,
more.
There's no more. There's no more questions. Okay.
I have two more answers that to questions that were asked, but we didn't have the answer on the spot. So we had a question in the beginning on what is the exact number of receivable days in Romania. This is 33. And we also had a question at some point on what is the net rental income for the Romanian properties, and this is 133 million.
And it's disclosed also in the annual report, page 179, to be specific.
Yeah.
Okay, so as there are no more questions, I'd like to make some concluding remarks. First, I want to point out that there have been over 200 people on this call, so that 200 stakeholders, including our shareholders, bondholders, financiers, and so on. And I'm also pretty sure there was somebody from the Viceroy team present on the line. I'd like to invite Viceroy to contact us and to come and challenge us on any of our responses in our written statement that we've made yesterday, and that before or as part of whatever next document they intend to issue about us, that they are able to say that before issuing that document that they have asked us for clarifications on any of the points that they raise in any such future document. Second, as in respect of one of the earlier comments about an investigation that the company could or would undertake, I kindly invite all our stakeholders to please submit via our whistleblowing facility any specific and substantiated allegations which they would like us to look into. If there is a clear demand for this from our share or bondholders, we'll revert to shareholders on this and we'll do it. For your information, since it's opening and the announcement of its availability, we have only received one comment on this website, and it was extremely unprofessionally put in terms of a rumor. We've heard that, I'm not exactly quoting, but it was to the point that we've heard NEPI has some dealings with some dubious characters in Sofia, Bulgaria. That is not the case. What individuals may be alluding to is that one of the former sellers of Paradise Shopping Center is still one of our subtenants. So people can take some half fact and construe an interesting story out of it, but nothing of substance. So with that, I'd like to close. So again, to repeat the two points, we invite Viceroy to challenge us on our written responses and consult with us prior to their next statement, if there will be one. And two, I invite our share and bondholders to submit any substantiated allegations that we can attend to as management and board of this company. We stand by our position that the reports published by the Viceroy grouping is misleading, and I dare say that I think it is intentionally misleading to gain economic benefit at the expense of our own stakeholders. Thank you very much for your time. And following in about 15 minutes from now, that's my alarm. In 15 minutes from now, we have, if everything is well, scheduled a radio interview on a local radio station in South Africa, where I expect somebody from Viceroy to be present as well. We'll see if that pans out. Thank you and have a good evening. Bye-bye.